Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is Dame Judi Dench. In an attempt to avoid obsequiousness, I'll state the facts as we know them. She has been acting for 58 years and counting. Her work ranges across theatre, television and film. If you're planning on buying her a birthday gift, don't make it a doorstop. She has 11 BAFTAs, 7 Oliviers, a Tony, 2 Golden Globes and an Oscar. Oh, and street slang now has the word Dench to describe something that's particularly cool. From the stage of the National Theatre to the screen of the multiplex cinema, subtlety and humanity characterise her work. Put simply, audiences love to watch her. She, by contrast, abhors watching herself and has never seen many of her most noted performances. What does she put her sustained success down to? Well, she says, fear generates in you a huge energy. You can use it. When I feel that mounting fear, I think, oh yes, there it is. It's like petrol. And petrol does then, Dame Judi, have, you know, a hazardous quality. And I'm wondering if this fear...
Inflammatory,
has, yes.
Is the word.
Does it have to be carefully handled, your fear?
Well, I think it does generate in you enormous energy. And I think it's much more frightening the longer you do it.
Why is that?
I think that at the beginning you're not so aware of what the pitfalls are and you rather blithely go into it thinking, well, I've got this part, how lucky, and I'll just go on and play it, you know. And it's only later that you suddenly realise, after doing so much, that, well, in a way, more's expected of you. And that makes it then more hazardous.
And is that more true in live performance? You know, if people have bought their tickets and booked the babysitter and they come into the theatre or the arena and think, we're going to see Dame Judi, you know, spinning some magic. You know, is it more difficult when a live audience
Those
is
are the
there?
People you don't want to meet before it, I tell you. The thing about, of course, being in the theatre is that you get a chance to do it again the next day if you mess it up.
Most people spend a lot of their life avoiding things that frighten them. Given that you don't, I'm wondering if you're very brave in other parts of your life. Are you very sort of blisteringly honest with friends, or do you drive very quickly, or, you know, do you like...
I do drive very quickly.
Do you?
Well, not so much now. I used to drive very quickly indeed. No, I don't think so. I've just found that the thing I do, what goes with it is fear and a kind of anxiety, but you can turn that into something that is useful.
I've heard that you like learning something new every day. Is that still true?
I like learning a new piece of information each day. I love that. It's sometimes to make me laugh and sometimes to just think, next time we do a quiz or something at home, I'll use that.
So are you on Wikipedia all the time then?
Don't know what that is. I don't know what Wikipedia is. I'm the person who barely has an ironing board.
Let's hear your first disc of the morning, Dame Judi Dench. What are we going to hear first of all?
We're first going to hear Farewell to Stromness.
And why have you chosen this?
I've chosen it because my passion is Scotland. We used to go every single year, Michael and I, and Finty. And I am absolutely bewitched by it. And therefore this piece, Farewell to Stromness, Peter Maxwell Davis, it's sublime.
part of Farewell to Stromness, composed and played by Peter Maxwell Davis. Shakespeare, Shaw, Ibsen, Pirandello, Chekhov, and on and on and on. We know you for so many of your great stage performances, and never yet a one-woman show. Why is that?
No, that's something I really couldn't possibly do. I couldn't do it because so much part of being in the theatre is being part of a company, being part of a kind of jigsaw, of being able to present this finished picture to the audience. And I wouldn't even know who to rely on if it was on my own, and I wouldn't even know who to get ready for. You'd have none of those wonderful larks that go on sometimes in the dressing room or in a company of people. So Michael used to say that I know why you're an actress. It's because you're so nosy. You have to know about everybody and what they're doing and whether it's their grandmother's birthday. I don't think it is that, really. I think it is very much a part of just being part of something. It's the same syndrome as being on my own. I don't like that.
And what happens to you when you're on your own?
Oh, everything gloomy. I like it best when I'm looking forward to somebody arriving.
This is very unusual. You've had two big TV hit comedies so far, A Fine Romance with your late husband, of course, the actor Michael Williams, and As Time Goes By with Jeffrey Palmer. And you've said that sitcom is the most difficult thing you've ever done. I don't understand that.
Oh, well, it's very, very simple, because you read it on a Tuesday. You know it at the end of Wednesday. You've set it by the end of Wednesday. And then you rehearse it Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Then you do it, a comedy, for the first time in front of an audience on Sunday. And, you know, in the theatre, if we're doing a comedy, you have previews and you hear where the laughs are and you then know how off your timing is and how to get the laugh. But you don't get that with a situation comedy. And at the beginning, we used to stand there and they used to introduce us one by one. And every single time, of all A Fine Romance and all As Time Goes By, I used to stand there every Sunday night and say, how have I got myself into this position? I cannot believe that I've got to go out. Because it also is splitting the atom in a way, because you have to say hello to the audience, hello, yes, very nice. And then suddenly you have to go and do the scene.
And I've read that you hate doing those hellos as yourself. That, and also you hate curtain calls. And I can't help thinking you've only got yourself to blame on that one. Why is it that you hate curtain calls?
Well, the same reason as I hate making a speech. You know, because that somehow is not to do with the person I'm trying to be in the play.
Why did you say yes to the Oxford Union then when they asked you along?
That's a good question. Well, because I had John Miller with me. I've got a buddy with me. So that's all right. But on my own is quite another thing.
Judy Dench, it's time for your second disc now. Tell me what we're going to hear.
Well, my very first night in New York, I went to Birdland. And as we arrived, it was the two men at the door. This man hit the other one straight through a plate glass door and down the stairs. I thought, oh, this is living. And it was Count Basie and Joe Williams that night. It was thrilling.
Well, all right, okay, will you win? I'm in love with you. Well, all right, okay, will you win? Baby, what can I do? I'll do anything you say, and it's just got to be that way. Well, all right, okay, you win. I'm in love with you. Well, all right, okay, you win. Baby, me and you, anything you say I'll do, as long as it's me and you. But the first thing in the morning, you've got to wake me with a kiss. You gotta make up for all the loving you have made me miss. Well, all right, okay, you win. I'm in love with you. Well, all right, okay.
That was Count Basie and All Right, Okay, You Win. Judy Dench, tell me about the Settlement Players in York.
Oh, the Settlement Players, they were the most wonderful company in York that my father and mother were both part of. My mum used to make costumes and things. My father used to act.
And this was amateur domestics?
Yes, he was a doctor. And I did Tobias and the Angel for them
There's a wonderful photograph of you that I've seen, a black and white photograph. There's a group of about six or seven little girls. You are almost, I think you might be the smallest. And, you know, you're all posing on stage. And to be honest, some of them are looking the other way and some of them are not that interested. But there are you, perfectly.
Showing off, I
well,
expect.
You might say that. Perfectly holding your dress and staring right down the barrel of the camera. You always had it, did you? You always had that.
I don't know. I remember playing the snail. That was my first performance, and I remember it very well. And my father made me a huge shell, buckram kind of shell, which I had to creep under and at one point creep out of. And when it came to the day that the parents came, I stood up with this thing tied round me, looking out at everybody. And I just heard this wonderful principal of the school, Miss Meeby, saying, "Get down, Judith," he said. I remember it absolutely vividly.
One of the other parts that you were given, I think it was in a school play, and you were the fairy in the Nativity. Do you remember that?
I certainly do. My friend Elizabeth Blackley, I think, played an angel. My other friend David Reimer played a king, and they said, "And you," they said to me, "will be a fairy." And I thought, that's not a part in the Nativity play. That's nothing to do. I want either to be the Virgin Mary or I want to be an angel. I did it, but with a crutch.
What sort of little girl were you?
Well, no television. We were always dressed up, always on bikes.
Dressed up in costumes?
Dressed up in costumes. We had a big hamper and we had all sorts of bits of things in there and always in other people's gardens. And going to bed and hearing the boys playing cricket in the garden. I still don't like going to bed and hearing people talking quietly in the garden because I know I'm missing something.
Let's have some more music, Judy Dench. Tell me about this.
My third disc is I want my brother Geoffrey, who really inspired me so much about Shakespeare and about being a student and being an actor. We did a CD called Exits and Entrances, and on it he does Shall I Compare Thee to a Summer's Day?
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed, and every fair from fair sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
That was your brother Geoffrey Dench with Shakespeare's Sonnet number 18, and the music was by Jackie Williams. You said during that, Dame Judy Dench, that you used to call Shakespeare, what was it?
The Man Who Pays the Rent. As most Michael and I were at Stratford all the time, and I'd been at the Vic, and so that's what he was known as in our house.
In 1957, you as good as sort of walked out of the doors of Central after you graduated and straight onto the stage at the Old Vic. You were cast to play Ophelia. You were an unknown. The director saw in you not just ability, but something else that was special. And yet you were hammered by the critics and you ended up being replaced in that production. How did you... I mean, what went through your head at the time?
I played it for a year at the Vic. And then when we went to America, I didn't play it anymore. Well, I think I had to do an enormous swallow. And strangely, after being in 6 months in America, where we were, and we came back and went to Yugoslavia with it, and I got the part back again. And I had watched Barbara Jefford play Ophelia in America on the tour. And I think I had watched and learnt a great, great deal more. And it is a question of just being allowed to learn it, that's wonderful. I mean, I could have been fired and that would have been it. I don't know what would have happened. But I went on to play lots of other parts that season. And so it was all experience.
Do young actors come and ask you for advice? And I'm sure you're asked all the time to come and give addresses and speeches and be interviewed in front of young acting students. I mean, what do they ask you and what do you tell them?
They say, how do I get the next job? How do I get an agent? I mean, I love answering questions from actors. If it's a two-way conversation, I love it. But I can't stand there and spout about acting. I think acting is... I think it's always talked about, and it shouldn't be talked about, it should be done. And it should either be a success or not a success. Just get on, tell the story. So I can help as far as, oh, learning how to use your voice and project. And goodness knows that's a thing at the moment, because I think that drama schools don't teach actors to project anymore. And, of course, in a lot of theatres now, you get a mic, you know. We never did. You just learn that the person sitting in the back seat of the upper circle is the person you play to. And I always say to students, if you want to be an actor, do watch other actors. Make up your mind about whether you like that or whether it conveys the story to you, because only that way can you learn.
Let's have some more music. We are on your fourth of the morning. Tell me about this disc and why it is that you've particularly chosen it.
When we went to America, we were there for 6 months with Vic, and I knew nothing about jazz. And John Neville, who was leading the company, jazz was his passion. And gradually I got introduced to jazz, which then was all in kind of underground cellars and things. I mean, it was just magical. And one of the nights, I think it was in San Francisco, but it may not have been, I saw Billie Holiday and I heard her sing Strange Fruit.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree.
That was Billie Holiday and Strange Fruit. I should tell listeners, Dame Judy Dench, that you've been just glancing down your list and saying, oh, crikey, I'm not going to like being on this island at all. You're worried about your list. What's wrong with it?
I am, rather. Now I hear it all together. It's not with the other rather upbeat things.
Right.
So it's going to make us all drop off this, isn't it?
Well, you can always change your mind. It is your list. If at some point you think you want to put in a little bit of razzle-dazzle, you feel free to do that.
That would be good.
Is it true that when your daughter Finty was born, you said to Michael, your husband, she was born in 1972, that you were prepared to give up work altogether?
Yes, I did. And Michael said, no, please don't do that.
I have two whys. Why did you want to give it up altogether, and why did Michael persuade you that you must not?
I wanted to give it up because I wanted to be a proper mother and be around. And Michael didn't want, I expect, because of the gentleman who pays the rent, I expect. I'm not sure.
You lived not just with your husband and your daughter, but also with your parents-in-law and with your mother. Now, I think that's a commendable idea. What, in practice, how was that?
It was fantastically worthwhile. It happened for 12 years. And a family community was something that I always wanted. And my pa had died. So one Easter, Michael's parents and my ma all came for Easter. And we were in a tiny cottage in Stratford. And they all just got on so well. And we had the most lovely time. And it was Michael, actually, who said to me, when they'd gone back, wouldn't it be rather wonderful to have everybody together. And that's what we did. We said to them, would you like to do that? And they all said, absolutely, we would. And we had a house outside Stratford, Charlcote. And that's how we all lived. It wasn't easy sometimes. We used to, you know, there's always something brewing. But it was terribly exciting and it was terribly lively. And Fint remembers it because she, you know, was brought up with her grandparents, not my pa, alas. And it was a glorious time.
There aren't many acting couples who manage successful careers both and a successful marriage. I'm wondering how you and Michael negotiated that for 30 years until he passed away. You had that situation. Yes. that's rare.
It was rare. I don't know how we negotiated it. It was just one of those wonderfully lucky and remarkable things that happened, that we both worked all the time. And, you know, Finty was there with us. And so we somehow managed it, that one of us was around all the time while she was growing up.
It's something of a burden to take upon yourself for your daughter, isn't it? When your mother and indeed father are so well known for something.
I think
say,
it's
I
a
want...
nightmare.
Yes.
Absolute nightmare. And I think that people, you know, compare and say things. I don't think it's kind when people do that at all. I think it makes it very, very difficult. And nor do I think there's a necessity for it.
Did you ever try to persuade her to take up something
else? Well, she wanted originally to be an acrobatic nurse. And so we said, pretty good, I said, everyone will want the one who comes swinging down the ward upside down to take your temperature.
Let's have your next bit of music then, Judy Dench. We're on your fifth.
When Fint was at Central, she has a lovely singing voice, and she was in A Little Night Music, which I'd never seen before. And I just fell for it in such a big way. And I don't think it was long after that. Oh, a few years, I think. And I was asked to play Desiree in the National Theatre production of Little Night Music. And then I became a complete devotee of Stephen Sondheim, who I think is a genius. And I love this song. I love it from Follies.
The sun comes up, I think about you. The coffee cup, I think about you. I want you so, it's like I'm losing my mind. The morning ends, I think about you.
Dorothy Collins as Sally with Losing My Mind from the original cast recording of Stephen Sondheim's Follies. It is ridiculous, Dame Judy Dench, to try to encompass all the awards that you have earned. So I've decided that we might just take a snapshot. And the snapshot I want to take is from 2001. You were awarded a BAFTA for playing the writer Iris Murdoch, and you were also awarded a BAFTA fellowship that year for your outstanding contribution to TV and film. But what are your memories of that time?
Well, it was a rather kind of grim time for me, that. Because Michael had just died and I was not in a frightfully wonderful place. I just remember Billy Connolly being very, very, very funny, because my BAFTA fellowship was at the Haymarket. And Fint and I sat on the front row. He made us laugh a lot, and that was lovely. Sir Richard Attenborough, Dickie Attenborough too, gave it to me. And I didn't really have a speech. I was completely overwhelmed. And then I kind of immersed myself in a lot of work, one after another. I went and did a bit of the Shipping News, so many weeks, and then I came home and did the whole of Iris, and then I went back and did the rest of the Shipping News, and then I came home and did, I think, The Importance of Being Earnest. Yes, The Importance. And that was using up the petrol.
How much time did you take time away from acting after your husband died? Did you say, well, that... Everything's
no,
stopped.
I don't think I did.
Did you not?
No. And I think it was the best thing I could do. And it was also being with incredible people. Kevin Spacey was phenomenal, wonderful, really fantastic friend, as then was Richard Eyre and Jim Broadbent when I came back to do Iris. And, you know, spread amongst friends. It was good.
Richard Eyre, who directed you in Iris, has spoken about your ability to switch in and out of character. He said it's almost an unbelievable thing. He watched you do it, particularly in Iris, where you would be relating a sort of funny story or a joke or something, and then it would come to the moment, and this might be a moment that many people remember in that film, where Iris Murdoch is deep into her Alzheimer's and she is being read to by her husband, and she says the thing about, I wrote book.
Funnily enough, I would do that quite differently now. But then, you know, that's the thing about film. Suddenly you look at the screen and you know there are so many buttons you can press in order to convey something. And then you look at the screen and think, why on earth were those the buttons I pressed when I could have pressed another one and been, you know, it's the choice you have to make. And it's fixed forever. You can't change it.
May I ask you how you would do it now? What would you do?
What, the I wrote?
Yes.
I don't know, but I've done it quietly in my room since seeing it, and I know there's another way of doing it.
We're going to hear some more music, Dame Judi Dench. Tell me about this. We're on your sixth of the day.
I expect this is something gloomy.
it's your list.
Six. This is Sinatra, who I think I've probably chosen every time I've been ever asked to choose a record. I can't be anywhere, actually, without Frank Sinatra. Michael and I saw him at the Albert Hall, and we went to a pub for a drink beforehand, and Michael started crying in the pub before we even got there. He said that Sinatra got more people in and out of bed than anyone in history. Of course, he's quite right.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you in the heart of me, so deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair never will go so well. But why should I try to resist when, baby, I know so well I've got you under my skin.
I've got you under my skin. That was Frank Sinatra. So, Dame Judi Dench, Dustin Hoffman, Robert Hardy, Daniel Craig, you've had them all. Who's been your favourite leading man?
It's an absolutely impossible question.
Well, a few favourites, then.
I don't know the answer to who's my favourite leading man, actually, except that all of them, bar one, I think, had glorious senses of humour. And no, I'm not going to tell you who
one
was.
Oh, damn. The glories of being M, you know, it was a... I don't know if it was a wonderful part to play. Goodness knows it was a wonderful part to watch. You've said goodbye to her now. She is gone. But I'm guessing very fond memories of that period.
And yeah, glorious memories. Absolutely glorious memories. I didn't for a second ever imagine that I would play it. And I was a huge fan of the Bond films. And I 17 years and did 7 films. 4 with Pierce, 3 with Daniel. And just the most glorious time.
Here's the interesting thing, I think, that talking to people about you, it can often be the case that if I'm interviewing a very well-known actor, people will say, oh, I loved him in blah, blah. About you, they don't say they love you in a part. They say they love you. There is a huge well of affection for you as an individual. What do you make of that?
Well, that's very, very nice to hear. They should have seen some of my performances. They'd have had a hideous time. I kind of half-heartedly keep a book on this about what people say when they come round after the theatre. It's very, very illuminating.
Backstage, what? Give us
well,
a few.
You'll get a knock on the door and you'll say, come in, and they'll come in and you say, well, how are you? You think, how am I? Well, you know how I am, you've just seen me. Or they say, you must be exhausted. Good book, actually. Good book to bring out for Christmas. Slim, but might be worthwhile.
Let's go to the music then. Oh, in fact, we're not going to the music, but we are going to your seventh. Tell me about this.
This is something that I listen to regularly. It's the shipping forecast. Every night that I hear it, I go right round the country listening to them all. I see the country so clearly. And the most romantic of the names, almost, is Finisterre, or was Finisterre, because now, of course, Finisterre has been changed to Fitzroy. And I know that Fitzroy was remarkable, and he actually is responsible for a weather forecast. But at the same time, I miss Finisterre, and I'm just very sad, for the same reason that I'm sad that they don't play all those wonderful British tunes in the morning very, very early, like early one morning. And I loved that. But I love the whole idea of Land's End and Finisterre. I loved it.
And now the shipping forecast, issued by the Met Office at 0505 on Saturday, the 1st of December, 2001. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Cromartie, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, Biscay, Irish Sea, Malin, Faroes and Southeast Iceland. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. German Bight, Humber, Thames, Dover. South 5 to 7, veering north or northeast 3 or 4. Rain dying out, moderate or poor becoming good. White, Portland, Plymouth, Biscay. Southwest 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8 at first in Biscay, veering east 3 or 4. Rain at first, moderate or poor becoming good. Finisterre, southwest 5 to 7 at first in southeast, otherwise north 5 or 6. Occasionally 7 later in south, becoming variable 3 or 4 in north. Rain or showers, moderate or good. Seoul, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea. West or northwest 5 to 7, increasing gale 8 in Irish Sea for a time, backing south 4 or 5, occasionally 6 later in West Seoul. Squally showers, moderate or good.
Part of a shipping forecast from 2001, including a reference there to the area of Finisterre, your favourite, read by Corey Corfield, specially recorded for you, Dame Judy. And our thanks go to the Met Office for providing that script.
Thank you.
From
Thank
their
you.
Archives. What do you look for now in your life? You seem quite a spontaneous person to me. Are you a planner?
I don't plan much. I just hope to go on working and just, you know, enjoy good health. I say, touch wood, and overcome the things that I think I can't do, like read a book anymore.
This is macular degeneration,
yes, yes.
Which you have.
And somehow adjust and make it as nice to hear a book as read one.
A little bit of desert islandry then. Cast away, alone on this island, annoyed that you don't have friends and family and a cast around you. Will you be very practical? I mean, could you fish? Could you gut a rabbit?
No. I couldn't do any of those things. I couldn't catch an animal and kill it. I'm a terrible hypocrite. I shouldn't eat meat at all.
Can you cook?
And I'm mad. Can I cook? No, I can't. And I'm mad about lobster, but then I saw them on the seabed, all walking along the seabed, holding claws like that. So it was a dodgy few months after that. But then suddenly I overcame it.
You struggled through.
And struggled through and ate one. But I'd have to be on the berries.
Tell me about your final piece this morning then. What are we going to hear, Dame Judy Dench?
I have to take Miles Davis with me on my island. Although my really musical upbringing is really entirely classical, I'm still rather amazed at this extraordinary list I've chosen. But I would have to take Miles Davis, because I knew him in New York too.
Did you?
Yes, because we were 6 months in America and we just, you know, followed everybody around. He was a friend of one of the actors in the company, Job Stewart. And so we went and heard him playing. And so now, the moment I hear him, I'm back in one of those wonderful smoky rooms in New York. Glorious.
Miles Davis and Blue and Green. So, Judy Dench, it's time for me to give you those books. You're going to get the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and you get to take along one other book. What will your book be?
I'm not sure that this might not be amalgamating two things, but if I can have an audio machine, and what I would love is, more than anything, I would love my daughter to have recorded Wavell's Other Men's Flowers.
We can definitely give you that, because given your macular degeneration, a book is not going to be much use to you, so we certainly will give you an audiobook with your daughter, Finty Williams, reading that for you. And a luxury, too.
My luxury, I'm going to turn my island into kind of Easter Island, because I would like cutouts of all my friends and my family and the people I love most. I would like cutouts of them, and then I would put them up and rearrange them all around the island.
You may certainly have those. And one of the discs to save, which one of the list would you save? And you're grimacing now, because you're worried that you've chosen far too downbeat a list, but I'm going to force you to choose one.
I shall want something very upbeat. I will take... I'm so sorry.
All right.
I don't want any of those... I don't want to go to the iron. I don't want any of those records with me. What'll I take? I'll take Sinatra.
Right. It's yours then. I've got you under my skin. That's yours. Dame Judy Dench, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you, Kirsten. What a nightmare.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.